The Evolve with Pete Evans podcast is a conversation about my favourite ingredients for a healthy human experience. We take an informed look at topics that include nutritional and emotional well-being, as well as expanded consciousness. I love exploring the topics that are not traditionally taught at school and take a deep dive into them with my special guests. I invite you to sit back and come along for the ride with an open mind and heart, and please share with your family and friends, as these podcasts may just be the seed from which many things will flourish from. Cheers. We've been using Waters Co. water filters for the last 10 years, and I wholeheartedly trust my family's health with them. Waters Co., established 1977, have personal and domestic water filters, which turns your ordinary tap water into great-tasting, alkaline, ionized mineral water, which removes up to 99.9% of fluoride, heavy metals, chemicals, and bacteria, so you can love your tap water again. The Bio 1000 is the latest edition of the BMP 1000 model and the culmination of over 40 years of experience and research into water filtration by some of the world's leading scientists. Waters Co. was first to market with natural gravity-fed systems, creating alkaline water way back in 1984, and have continued to lead the market in research and development, setting the benchmark for all other brands to follow. Please go to my webpage, PeteEvans.com, to learn more and to receive your special discount from my link on the products page. You're going to love it. Panache Desai is a contemporary thought leader and author whose message of love and acceptance has drawn thousands of people from around the world to his seminars and workshops. He's not aligned with any religious or spiritual tradition. He empowers people to free themselves of pain, suffering, sadness, and self-limiting beliefs. After a profoundly transformative experience more than a decade ago, he has committed his life to being a spiritual teacher, empowering humanity in the deepest states of connection and awareness, and helping people everywhere to directly experience divine consciousness for themselves. To find out more about Panache Desai, please visit his website, panachedesai.com. That's PanacheDesai.com.
Panache, thank you so much for joining us on the podcast today. How are you, my brother?
I love you, bro. It's great.
I think we're going to have a lot of fun today. And I first met you last year on this very strange adventure in Costa Rica where we got to connect over a week. And I was attracted to your energy and your being. And it was really interesting because the whole week I felt there was a little bit of a resistance between the two of us to actually get down into a conversation. And it was really playing on my mind. I was like, how come I can't connect with this fella in a way? And I knew there was something in us. And then on the last day of the retreat, we had that beautiful breakfast or a beautiful morning with a cup of tea. And we actually got to have an hour together before we went off into our different parts of the world. And I want to talk to you about that, about how I'm always sort of self-analyzing and evaluating my existence and my life and these meetings of other people. And for that week, I was like, I really need to sit down with Panache. I don't know what it is, but there's resistance in me or him, or just the timing isn't right. So how do we surrender into that? And I'm wondering whether that's happened for you in your life, and when you're walking this journey and you want to do something, but there's still resistance in there and you've got to just sort of trust in that. So talk to me about that.
So there's a couple of things. First of all, nobody in the world could ever resist you because you are just love on legs. That's the first thing. Second thing is that, you know, we're only ever bumping up against ourselves. And I think that, you know, when you're in a deeply immersive retreat like the one that we were on, and it's so deeply personal and you're doing such a deep dive into everything that's in your unconscious, you know, that you're literally liberating on behalf of yourself and everyone that you love and collectively the planet. You know, you're really in your own zone, in your own world. And so in that space, you know, having been there now, you know, enough over the course of 6 years, I've learned to not personalize anything, because really we have no idea where anyone is in their experience. And that's actually served as a great tool for life, because really, in all honesty, we're unique lenses of experience. And we honestly don't know what anyone else is going through or what anyone else is experiencing at any point in time. And so if we're looking for belonging or acceptance outside of ourselves, that's a recipe for suffering. Mm. And so in that space and in life in general, I've always allowed life to come to me, because when it comes to me, I know it's meant for me. And when people connect with me and they genuinely want to engage with me, I know that that's the time to have the conversation. And so it's amazing what happens in that retreat space and how you show up, because often in social settings or ordinary environments where we're interacting, when we're not doing that level of a deep dive, which subsequently I've discovered everything is a deep dive, but that's, we'll have that in a minute. But in ordinary social circumstances, we're very wrapped up in being approved of or being liked, right? Or having our presence somewhere acknowledged, right? And so again, this whole notion of realizing that everyone is just in their own experience, that everyone's a unique lens of experience, that everybody's interpreting reality in their own unique way, provides you a lot of freedom, because your state of being and your peace is no longer incumbent upon the mood, the acknowledgement, the lack thereof from another. You really begin to discover that you're self-generating all of these things, that you have the capacity to create all of these things inside of yourself. And once that shift happens, that's when freedom begins. Real authenticity begins, is when you're freed of the need for that acknowledgement or even that interaction. And you just allow life to unfold and you allow life to unveil its perfection in its own time.
I hear that. I feel that. It's so interesting because in that week that we were together, I mean, we were at Rhythmia in Costa Rica and we were drinking a plant medicine called ayahuasca over four nights and also doing breath work. And what I noticed in that experience, and it's so beautiful what you've just said, is in the evening when we had drank the ayahuasca, there were 40 of us plus give or take a few, all having our own experiences. And basically the shaman said, just deal with your own stuff. If somebody next to you is crying, or the next person on the other side of you is vomiting, or the other person is screaming, or the other person behind you is laughing, nearly detach from that and just go through your own stuff. And this journey is for you. And I guess what you were just saying is to carry that theme over into every single part of your life. Because everybody is having their own experience, and we can't experience what that is for everybody. Or can we?
Exactly.
Or can we?
At some point we can. That's where that profound sense of empathy comes in, right? What I always say to people is that, you know, you're the right size container for your love. You know, you're the person that you have to love. You know, you've got all the attributes and all the qualities that you have inside of you for you to embrace. And we can't expect that from outside of us, because nobody else is you. Right. And when you think about it in the context of evolution, how perfect is it that we all have our own quota or our own slice of the pie that we're here to love on behalf of everyone else? And autonomy and this individuality, I feel, is what we have to hold on to as being the truth. Because what's happening now more and more is this kind of groupthink mentality, this kind of herd mentality. It's so polarizing and so divisive, and everyone's in every kind of position, and everyone's egoically holding on to their version of what's right. But what's being lost is the right for the individual to express their uniqueness, right? Now, as long as that uniqueness isn't hurting anybody else, it's not violating any laws, it's a uniqueness that's just their unique expression, then that's wonderful, right? That's a uniqueness that's contributing to the masterpiece that is our reality. And so the cultivation of our uniqueness, how we think, how we feel, how we show up, what our insecurities are, the parts of us that are still residing in shame, the parts of us that are still residing in unconscious choices and decisions, like all of this is ours to love. It's ours to accept. Once we get to a point where we've pretty much integrated the majority of that, at that point, our life is no longer about us, right? The journey of looking in the mirror and having our unconscious reflected back to us, our shadow basically, or our light reflected back to us, ends. And from that moment forth, our service begins. Why? Because we're living then from overflow. Our light, our love, all of this time that we've invested into cultivating a level of self-awareness, then spills over from us to every other person, and they can feel that from us. And in our presence, they then are able to love themselves and support themselves, because they've finally met someone in the world who's unapologetically being themselves.
Unapologetically. Explain what that means, unapologetically.
I feel like we're living in a world right now where everything is so divisive. And, you know, we're living in the height of this cancel culture. And, you know, the media is biased, depend on who's funding that particular news source. And all of the information is basically skewed through a distorted lens. And the reason why it is that way is because I feel, and this is my own personal opinion, that we're going through this awakening and this remembrance of the love that we are. And we're also going through this time of radical personal empowerment. And I feel like what's been holding us back collectively as a species is this kind of waiting for this sense of approval for us to finally be able to be who we are, to be who we've always been. And so unapologetically being yourself is not waiting for somebody to approve of you or give you permission to be who you are. It's recognizing that that's the only person you ever can be. And sometimes that's going to trigger people. Sometimes that's going to challenge people. Sometimes that's going to be in harmony with people. But authenticity always polarizes. Uniqueness always evokes a response. It's like when you're in an art gallery and you're looking at a timeless piece of artwork, you're either going to love it or hate it. You're not going to like it. We're not here to be liked. We're here to uniquely be ourselves and to be in that and to stop making it wrong. What I've discovered, mate, is that from the moment we were born, we've been conditioned to conform. And that's why suicide and depression and all of these things are reaching this critical mass, because people are trying to fit in. They're trying to belong. They're trying to do everything that they're supposed to do. And they're still not accepted. They're still not approved of, and they're still not loved. If we could only allow people to be themselves and nurture the individuality of who we are, at that point, everything would start to transform around us. We'd begin to realize that that uniqueness is our strength. It's our superpower. It's what allows us to truly make the difference that we've come here to make.
Uniqueness. I love that. When we first met, you said something to me that has stayed with me. And we were doing an exercise of sorts. We had Jack Canfield conducting some getting to know you, or getting to know yourself more so, through these beautifully crafted exercises where we sit opposite each other and tell each other our greatest fears or our greatest strengths or this, that, and the other. And it was a beautiful experience. I mean, it brought tears to my eyes and also a great deal of understanding that I've got a lot more work to do, or a lot more living to do. I shouldn't use the word work, maybe. But you sat opposite me, and when we first met, you said, "I've already seen your whole life play out. I can see where you're headed." And it really sort of caught me off guard a little bit. And I'd love for you to be able to, because I haven't actually asked you the question since then, is, and I don't want you to tell, don't need you to tell me how my life plays out, but how do you have that gift to be able to see, is it the future or is it the being of somebody?
So we're all interconnected, and there is absolutely a universal presence or an energy that is at the source of every experience. And the blessing is now that science is beginning to catch up with the ancient yogis and mystics have known for millennia, that we're living inside of this oneness, this unified field of collective experience. So by virtue of that as a truth, when you know yourself, you know everyone. When you know who you are, when you really take the time to get to know who you know everyone. Why? Because everyone that you meet is a reflection of you. How is it that at that retreat, or how is it just in general, that at that moment in time and space in an infinite universe, you and I are sitting there lovingly gazing into each other's eyes, expressing our fears, our loves, our preferences, and what it is that we want out of life? Like, what is the actual likelihood of that? I'd never met you prior to that moment. I hadn't even heard of you. You hadn't heard of me. There was no point of relationship or connection. And yet, as two souls, here we are, seated across from each other, engaging in this very intimate way with one another, bearing our essence, bearing our truth, being vulnerable. When you think about the actual probability or likelihood of that event actually coming into being, it's impossible. Impossible, improbable, 100%. So how is it that that happens? There's an orchestration to life. There's a greater rhythm and cadence to life. So in India, we have this greater cultural awareness and heritage. It's like 5,000 years, 200,000 years and beyond. There's actually a village in India where they have these nadi leaves. And what you do is you go there, you give them your name, your father's name, your grandfather's name, if you can remember it, and they'll pull this leaf and your whole life is on that leaf. Every single detail. They know everything about you. When I was born, two priests in a village in India created my chart, and everything in that chart never met me. I was literally just had been born. Everything was in there. So I began to think, well, wait a minute. If all of this stuff is recorded somewhere, then that means it has to have already happened. Well, then what that means is we're living it out as if for the first time. So when we meet each other, we're not really meeting each other for the first time. It's just the first time that we're consciously remembering having met. When you think about time, right? What is time? Really, everything is unfolding in this moment. Everything's only ever happening in the now. And so when you begin to get a sense of person, you get to begin a sense of their heart, you can begin to tap into their energy. Everything is in their energy. Everything is in everyone's energy. That's why immediately we either have this dissonance or resonance with somebody. What are we responding to? They haven't even said a word yet. It's their energy. It's who they are. It's their essence. You know, do they resonate with us? Because we're instinctual. And what we have overridden through becoming overly analytical as a species is this instinctual way of being that is still very present in spirituality, in indigenous cultures and civilizations, and in ancient traditions or wisdom traditions, right? There's still this awareness of this instinctive nature of life. There's still this notion of this interconnectivity. There's still this notion of this truth that permeates all things. Now, once you know yourself, and you know your life, and you know the trajectory of your life, you also know then that everyone who's in front of you has that same path and that same trajectory, because everybody is you. So when you're first engaging in reality, when you're first engaging in life, you feel like a victim. You feel like everything's happening to you, right? Somebody said something and they made you angry, right? Well, they didn't make you angry. All they did was remind you of the anger that you already had inside of you. Right? That's a more empowered way of dealing with the same circumstance or scenario. In oneness, life is as you. That means that everything is an aspect of you. Everyone is an aspect of you. But that's 100% accountability and responsibility for everything, for every feeling, for every thought, for every physical sensation, as well as for every collective happening. And that's rare. But when you realize what this whole thing is about, it's about waking up to yourself. It's about looking in the mirror and loving the shadow, loving that which is unconscious, loving that which has yet to be revealed as the light. And the more you do that, the more you begin to accelerate this growth, the more you begin to mature, the more you begin to expand that accountability and that responsibility to where eventually everybody is you. Mm. There never was anything else. There never was anyone else. It was all just you. You were just interacting with this hall of mirrors that was reflecting back to you, yourself, in all of these different forms. But regardless of the mirror, it's only ever you.
Mm-hmm. True words, brother, true words. I don't want to dwell too much on where we are right now, even though I feel like we need to, and I feel like it's the perfect opportunity to speak to you about this. And I asked a fellow the other day that was on the podcast, why does it seem to me that people that... And I need to choose my words carefully here, but I'll...
Oh, don't start now, Pete.
Well, let's just put it on the table then.
Okay.
Why is it, in my perception, that people in positions of authority, let's use the government and our health ministers, for instance, and where we are at the moment, parts of Australia in the most severe lockdown as far as any parts of the world regarding this virus. And why is it that people like yourself, truth seekers, consciously aware people that go inside, that understand and keep searching for this truth or their truth, don't seem to be in positions of power and in these, I don't want to even use the word traditional, but let's use the government, for instance, at the moment, or the health ministers. Why is it that you and others in this space aren't in that space, and that these people have the ability to dictate what happens to a population? I mean, it's a big question.
So I think I'll address it from the perspective of fame or success and kind of a point that I can personally relate to and my experience with it. So I was on Oprah Winfrey's Super Soul Sunday in February of 2013. Subsequently went on to get a huge book deal with Penguin Random House. They had so much money from 50 Shades of Grey. I was a direct beneficiary of mommy porn, and they were giving out these huge book deals. Mm-hmm. And so I'm coming off of this peak experience of Oprah and then this huge book deal. Now, what happens is the world lacks imagination. So I'm Indian. And so immediately, even Oprah's first questions was, so you're like Deepak? And I'm like, well, actually, no, I'm just Indian. I said, people just lack imagination. You know, but I understand that line of questioning. I understand what happens from an industry perspective, right? As to why an entire industry would want me to be like Deepak, because Deepak is a known commodity. They understand what the lifetime earning potential is of being Deepak, and they also know how to commoditize him, right? So there is a system and a structure that ultimately wants you to conform to whatever archetype they present to you in order to be successful. But that archetype doesn't allow for your individuality. Okay? Mm-hmm. So basically, they want you to be like the next somebody. They don't want you to be the first Panache Desai. Okay? So every single person, as a part of their journey, their career, whatever path you're on, encounters this crossroads. Am I going to be the second best version of a Deepak Chopra, or am I going to be the best version of myself and bet on myself? Now, if I'm willing to be the second best version of Deepak and imitate Deepak, well, here's the amount of money I could make. Here's the influence I could have. Here's my book deals, and here's the life that I could provide for my family. Why? Because I've seen it, right? I understand what that is. But if I'm willing to remain in my uniqueness and to be who I am and to stay true to what I know and to express what I've come here to share, then that's all going away. And so at some point, you are going to be asked to compromise your uniqueness and your integrity for a bag of money. And you're going to realize that it's a game. And the reason why people who are awake and conscious don't end up in these positions of power and influence is because we're not willing to compromise our integrity and our uniqueness in order to be in those positions of false power. When you begin to see through power systems and structures, and you begin to see how the world is run, really, how the world is run is quite a whole other conversation, because there are a few people, a few corporate entities that are moving the needle on everything, including these politicians. Why? Because there's some financial benefit or interest that is a built-in vertical that works, right? So all of a sudden, and I've seen this myself because I've been fortunate enough to mentor and work with some of the most successful people in the world, right? And as it relates to money, it's not about red or blue, it's about green. And it's about how you can continue to further the momentum of your influence and how you can continue to position yourself to have the outcome that you want, right? So on the surface, it's made to be about political parties or agendas or about what's happening in the world, but it really isn't about that at all. It's about how do we keep this green flowing in the world, right? Now, if you don't know your value, you're willing to play the game because all of a sudden you're being validated and you realize, well, wait a minute, this person sees me, they get me, right? But the problem is in that moment, when you start to play that game, you're not honoring yourself. Right? You're not honoring your calling. You're not honoring why you're here. Right? And so this is why we don't end up in these very open public positions of influence and power, because we understand what comes along with that. And also we understand that these very open public positions of influence and power actually don't have the influence and power that you think they have. There's something greater at work in the world. There's a greater influence unfolding in the world. And I would rather be behind the scenes, quietly molding the hearts and minds of human beings all over the world and redirecting people to peace, than be up front and center and basically be the mouthpiece of somebody who has influence, money, and power, who wants a certain agenda unfolded on their behalf.
Mm. It's so interesting that you talked about that. Because when I first started my career in the media, I was asked to be, Jamie Oliver had just exploded, so to speak, and popped up on the international scene as cooking is cool again, or cooking is the new rock stars, so to speak, and Jamie Oliver's the whoever, the Mick Jagger. Yeah.
The Beatles.
So all of a sudden, like everything, they copy it. And in Australia, that we had a new cable network and they're like, we need to do a TV show. And they asked me if I would like to audition. I said, no. I said, I'm too shy. That's not really my path. And then I was asked again the following week, and I knew it was an invitation for personal growth at that stage, and it wasn't to become famous, so I couldn't think of anything worse at that particular point in time. But I knew it was an invitation from myself or from the universe to grow, because there was so much fear around being seen or being heard. And I'll never forget it, because the first day that I actually did a chemistry test, so to speak, the producer said, hey, listen, Pete, we're not really happy with how you're presenting yourself. Why don't you try to be a little bit more like Jamie Oliver? Or there was an English chef at the time called Ainsley Harriet, who was very flamboyant and colorful. And I knew then I had a decision to make. And it came to me straight away. I said to them, I can only be myself. And I'm not Jamie. I'm not Ainsley. I said, I'm a pretty quiet fella. And that's why I sort of said no to you guys the first time, because I'm shy. I said, I can be me. And if that isn't good enough, then that's cool. I can go back to my restaurant and work. And then to follow on from that, I was tested again, because then I got a manager, because that's apparently what people do once they become a public persona, is they get a manager to manage them. And I'll never forget it again, because the first day that I sat down with this manager, they said, who'd actually worked with Jamie Oliver and their team, they said, okay, we need to find you a niche market. And they said, you know, what are you passionate about? I said, everything. They said, what do you want to be known as? Do you want to be the seafood chef, or do you want to be the barbecue chef, or do you want to be the Aussie chef? I said, no, I don't want to be labeled anything. I want to be the chef that's versatile. And they said, that's really hard for us to market. And I said, but that's who I want to be. I said, I see myself doing this for a long term, longevity. I said, if I pigeonhole myself into one niche, that's very limiting. That's really limiting for myself, because I don't even know who I am. And it's so beautiful to hear that what you said, because I do feel like people want to conform to fitting an idea or replicating something that has been successful in the past instead of creating something new.
Right.
And I think that's what we're here to do, is create something new.
Yeah, that's why everything that goes mainstream is so diluted and so watered down, because it's been run through so many filters and been edited so many times that by the time it reaches the public, it's lost its essence. You know, and that's why authenticity is so jarring in the modern world. You know, when someone's just being themselves and just expressing their opinion and being out in the world, you know, it's shocking, because it's almost like public perception has been molded to accept certain types of personalities and certain types of messages and, you know, certain types of influence or certain types of energy or tonality. But when you're just being yourself and you're being how you were made to be, it fundamentally, they don't know what to do with that. You know, first of all, they realize that they can't control it. So that in and of itself is an issue. And then secondly, they realize that they can't commoditize it. And at that point, individuality is proven to be worthless, right? And yet again, it's, you know, conformity has value, right? It's like, if you could only play the game or play the rules, or, you know, we know, you know, it's an illusion, but just pretend, you know, just pretend. But the point is that the very second that you compromise or you pretend, or you as, you know, Pete Evans, you know, show up as Jamie Oliver or Ainsley Harriet, or as I, as Panache Desai, show up as Deepak Chopra, or, you know, any one of my Indian peers or colleagues, you know, we're pretending and we're playing a role. And that's why I believe that we're struggling so much in society, because, you know, these roles are what's being accepted. You know, it's this role. You know, it's not the truth of who we are. It's not authentically who we are. It's the role. And all of a sudden we're acting, right? We're acting on social media. We're acting on television, you know, what's left of it. You know, we're acting in our interviews. We're just living in this role and this identity. And this is why there's so much anguish. And this is why also, when people get to certain thresholds of fame and success and power and influence, why there's so much anxiety, why there's so much addiction, you know, why they struggle so much, why there's so much misery, honestly, because they've exhausted every material possibility. They've done everything that they were told to do, but they've never been accepted for being themselves. And because they've never been accepted for being themselves, they then have a hard time accepting themselves for being who they are, right? So this is the challenge that we're living inside of right now. I feel like what's being programmed and conditioned out of us is our uniqueness, which is ultimately our humanity. You know, a species that thinks the same, acts the same, feels the same, has the same opinions, you know, toes the line, is much easier to control and manage than a species that has its own uniqueness, has its own flavor, has its own nuance, you know, has its connection to intuition, you know, has its connection to its own truth and peace, right? So we're literally at this point now with cancel culture and everything that's happening, with this polarization that's playing out through the media, that our uniqueness is in some way being made wrong at greater and greater scale, right? It's like you can't really talk about what you want to talk about anymore. You can't express an opinion anymore that's counterintuitive to the public opinion, right? You can't show up as something other than any of these boxes of identification that just seem to be growing every day. You know, it just seems like these boxes of division, separation, and identification just seem to be growing every day. You know, everyone's at odds with somebody. Somebody has an issue with somebody. And this is just very anti-human in its agenda. You know, it's basically the old divide and conquer kind of colonial way of being, where we're going to drive this wedge of fear between people and force them into conformity. Because in the event that they don't conform to an opinion or an ideology or a belief, then we're going to shame them. We're going to attack them. We're going to take away their livelihood. We're going to discredit them. Right? We're going to rob them of their reputation and their good standing in society, right? But that's not a new game, right? It's a very old game, right? It's the equivalent of taking somebody into the town square and throwing rotten tomatoes at them, right? Lord only knows what that person did, right? But the fact that they're there and being publicly ridiculed means that people no longer listen to their voice, their opinion no longer matters. And no matter how valid their expression may be, it's always then questioned in the eye of the public, in the eye of those people that are a part of that town or village, right? Or city in the modern world. And so this is where we're at. This is the age that we're living in. And thank God for you, you know, thank God for your willingness and your wherewithal to not be Jamie Oliver. You know, Jamie Oliver basically democratized cooking. He's from East London, has a thick Cockney accent, and he made cooking not posh. That's all he did. Right? He brought cooking to your average Londoner. Whereas before, cooking was a luxury that could only be engaged in by people who had the time to actually cook. Most people were so busy working to support their families, they didn't even have the time to actually cook a meal at home. You know, they were just eating this diet of fast food or microwave meals or whatever. Right? So this is where we're at. And this is why people like you and I don't end up fitting into these systems and structures that, by the way, are crumbling around us anyway.
I find it fascinating. I mean, my own personal journey over the last few months has been so wild to watch, you know, as an observer. I mean, I've been publicly ridiculed by our medical association on talkback radio, saying that they're concerned about my mental health. And then that gets regurgitated through every news channel and talkback breakfast show and radio show, saying Pete Evans has a mental condition. And I was like, oh, this is interesting to see play out. And at the same time, now there's groups of people that if I endorse a brand, for instance, or a company, they will go on to that brand or website's social media page or company's social media page and attack them for letting me be a part of their business, to the point where some of the businesses have gone, hey, Pete, you're too volatile for us now.
You're a bit radioactive, mate.
And I'm like, and I said, you're bowing down to 10 keyboard warriors? Like, seriously, it's probably 10 of them or 20 of them that have a personal agenda or maybe even a political agenda to put pressure onto you. I said, you do what you got to do, but just realize that once you bow down, you know, what that means for you and your business and your company and the way that you live your life. And I'm enjoying this wonderful ride of being the observer and also the main actor in my own journey at the same time. And so many people are like, keep going, keep going, keep doing it. You're a voice for us. And at the other time, I've got people saying, hey, if you keep going, I had it last week. I had one of the companies I work with. They said, the legal team of this company got involved and they said, we're very concerned that you interviewed David Icke, the conspiracy theorist, and you're going to release his podcast. And you're jeopardizing however many years we've been in partnership together. And we don't know whether we can weather this storm if you release this podcast.
Let's talk about that, right? Let's talk about David Icke for a moment, because David Icke is appearing more and more at the forefront of kind of everyone's awareness and consciousness. David's been around for 30 plus years. Okay. So I remember when David Icke was on Terry Wogan and said what he said and then went on to be publicly ridiculed, right? By everybody for what he said and for how he showed up. And everyone just thought he'd lost his mind and whatever, right? But ultimately, how is it that one person voicing their opinion can be so fundamentally threatening to so many people, right? How is it that one person having the courage to be in their uniqueness, right, is so threatening? And so I listened to the Rose Icke interview just last weekend. And my favorite part of the whole interview was about the last 20 minutes when he starts to talk about universal love and how we are in oneness, that we're unique points of experience in consciousness, and that the more we begin to remember that we're love and the more that we begin to operate from this place, the more we begin to work in unity and harmony together, right? And so as I view these things, everything that everyone's saying and everything that everybody's doing is about themselves, right? So basically we're commenting on ourselves out loud, right? And I feel like there's a space for every opinion and for every view in the world. I feel like there's a space for every opinion and every view. It's up to us as individuals whether we resonate with that view or not, right? But at some point, we have to allow for the individuality of people and for the expression of people. We can't just, you know, summarily censor people directly or indirectly because we may not resonate with maybe 10% of their message or their delivery, even though 90% of it may resonate at a much deeper level than we're willing to admit, right? So when you look at figures like David Icke, or you look at, you know, what's beginning to happen around you, right, or certain other people that I am aware of in the world that beginning to come under, you know, increasing scrutiny just for expressing a unique opinion, you have to begin to ask yourself, why? Like, how is it that what Pete Evans does and says is so threatening that we're at this point where we're about to cancel him, take away his livelihood, take away his ability to take care of his family, right, because of his choice to air an interview that may not be congruent with what the collective thought process is around a circumstance or a situation? And for me personally, Pete, like, here's where it gets fascinating, right? So my daughter was born with a congenital heart defect, right? So she had a heart transplant when she was 18 months old. So she's immunosuppressed, okay? So I'm actually dealing with firsthand living with an immunosuppressed child. When we began our journey with Celeste, none of my kids were vaccinated. In order for Celeste to get her heart transplant, we had to vaccinate all of our kids. And what we did is we gradually began this process over time, or this kind of Japanese model where we're spacing everything out over time, of introducing them to these vaccines, right? And so I went from being somebody who wasn't a fan of medicine or the medical profession to literally being grateful for their presence because they saved my daughter's life, right? And so I think with all things, what we have to do is highlight the benefit of that particular system and structure, of that individual, of that which resonates. And then that part of it that doesn't resonate with us, just you don't need to pay attention to that. You don't need to get into that, right? I find value in every opinion right now. Like, for example, for me, I'm gathering up data points and information from everywhere, from everything from David Icke to Fox News to CNN to CNBC to MSNBC. Why? Same. Because you know what? That's the only way that you can begin to decipher what some semblance of the truth is. If you're just viewing the world through one lens and it's one way, then you're getting a very lopsided view of the world, right? But if you don't open yourself up to different opinions and different ideas, right, or different ways of thinking and being, how do you ever discover your own truth? And this is a big part of what freedom means. Freedom means having the right to choose. Having the right to choose. It's like you go and buy a car. How do you know that that's the car that you want unless you test drive it? And how do you know that that's the car that you want unless you drive two or three other cars to see if that's the most practical choice for you? You don't. So at some point, we have to have these alternative media networks and outlets and personalities and figures and voices and opinions so that we can begin to put together some semblance of a truth that resonates with us. And so it's been interesting watching what you've been going through. It's been interesting observing what David Icke's been going through for 30 years. It's been interesting observing what everybody's been going through who's unique and who's expressing uniquely. Right. It's been interesting to see what happens to people that have the courage to, from their heart, say what they think is true. Right. It doesn't mean that you have to accept it as the truth, but at least listen, at least be willing to see what resonates with you. Mm. And that's freedom. That's choice. That's empowerment. And that's what's being eroded away collectively.
My family and I have been using beautiful, high-quality essential oils for the last 20 years to live healthily every single day. Now, if you're passionate about health and are ready to step into leadership, I want to invite you to partner with my team and I to build a beautifully successful doTERRA business. Register at PeteHLC.com/Pete. That's PeteHLC, which stands for the Healthy Living Collective, .com/Pete.
Beautiful, beautiful, my brother. And what I find is interesting is when I had that conversation with David, and yesterday I had a chat with a fellow in Australia that's, and I don't want to say the equivalent of David Icke, but another free thinking individual that has come under scrutiny. The conversation, I would say, most of the conversation was pretty much what we're talking about today. It wasn't actually about conspiracy. Yeah. It was about expanded consciousness, how to be a free thinker, why it's important to take in all aspects of life and not be pigeon and closed off. And yesterday I was out in a beautiful part of Australia with some of the original tribal people of this country. And one of the fellas, Dean, was doing this beautiful Indigenous art piece, and he had on a t-shirt, and I was just gravitated towards it. His t-shirt said, "You're entitled to my opinion." I read it 10 times. I'm like, this is beautiful. You are entitled to my opinion. It's not I'm entitled to my opinion, but you're entitled to it. And I thought, what a beautiful but confronting message for those that and not willing to hear or to see opposing views. And I guess where the negativity seems to be stemming from for me in things that I read is that I am dangerous to people's health, even though we've been helping people over the last decade.
I can attest to that, mate. You are the most dangerous person alive right now on the planet. I've personally experienced you. You are absolutely the most dangerous person in the world because you have a huge heart and all you want to do is love people. So that makes you the most dangerous person on planet Earth, Pete Nevins. And that's the truth. That's the truth. You are so loving in who you are, generous in who you are, kind in who you are. You hold such a sense of respect for people, even people that disagree with you and attack you. Okay. And I've only ever experienced you as a gentleman. And as a compassionate, loving parent who wants nothing but the best for yourself, for your family, and for other families. And I don't understand how that perspective or that point of view has become so threatening. You know, even when I hear a David Icke, right? Like David Icke sharing what he's sharing for his grandkids. It's everything that he's talking about, what he's talking about, all these people, Rashid Batar, like all of these people that are voicing an opinion that's an opinion outside of the mainstream narrative. Why are they voicing these opinions? It's not for them. It's not for them. It's for everyone beyond themselves. So you have to at least allow people the space to express what it is that they want to say. And at that point, whatever's valid, take that from that conversation, take that from that interaction. And whatever isn't, take a look at why it doesn't resonate with you inside of yourself. And if it still doesn't resonate, just leave the rest of it, right? But at some point, you have to recognize that what makes you the most dangerous person in Australia or in the world. By now, you're all over the world. It's not just Australia, mate, just so you know. What makes you the most dangerous person in the world is the fact that you are so loving and that you're all about unifying people and empowering people with a different perspective and a different opinion. All right, well, if that's what it is, then may we all be as dangerous as you.
You mentioned earlier, and thank you for those beautiful words, my friend.
I love you.
I love you too. You mentioned before about authenticity and why it can be challenging for people once they do conform to their parents' beliefs, societal beliefs. How do you encourage people to find their authentic self? Or do people know what their authentic self is? And take me through the steps or the solutions for this.
So I think what's been missing is a really experiential basis for what authenticity is, right? So when I'm being myself, I feel peaceful. When I'm experiencing my enlightened consciousness, I'm experiencing peace. When I'm being naturally who I am, I'm at peace with myself. So for me, the reason why authenticity has remained ever elusive, or enlightenment, or these states of awakening, or these states of remembrance, is because people haven't had an experiential framework. It's all been mental. It's all been based in the mind. But once you get, wait a minute, so that means that how I am naturally is peaceful. Well, that's revolutionary in and of itself. So that means that all of this other stuff that's happening isn't really who I am. Okay. So then how do I want to feel? Do I want to feel more of that other stuff that's dissonant and jarring? Or do I want to feel more of this peace that I am? Well, how about this? How about I start to make choices and decisions that contribute to me feeling more peaceful? And this is how you gradually begin to create a life based on how you want to feel, instead of living a life based on the perceptions and opinions and requirements of other people, which is why we're miserable. Even when we get everything in the world, it's why we're miserable. Because we didn't stop from getting in touch with how we wanted to feel at the end of it. So for me, it's very simple. I'm at peace. If I'm at peace, I'm living with an absence of need. So at that point, I'm able to continue to advocate on behalf of that peace and nurture that peace in both myself and others. Why? Because that's our natural state of being. And when we're being in our natural state of being, we're up-leveling our immunity. There's no stress, there's no overwhelm, there's no upset, because we're not pretending. We're not living up to other people's expectations. We're not keeping up with whoever we're meant to be keeping up with on social media. We're living the right-sized life for us. Also, what contributes to the peace is the willingness on the part of the individual to turn and face themselves with love. Once you begin to realize that all of these emotions that you're feeling and these thoughts that you're thinking and these physical sensations that you're having in your body are impermanent, and you start to work with them and accept them and love them instead of reject them, you start to cultivate this inclusivity that leads to the realization and remembrance of the love that you are. And that's the beginning of self-love. When you're no longer rejecting parts of yourself, your greed, your lust, your envy, your jealousy, your shame, your rage, depression, anxiety, when you can include these parts of yourself in your experience, you become integrated. That integration allows for the remembrance of oneness and wholeness, which is ultimately a manifestation and expression of universal love. So at that point then, what am I putting out to the world? Universal love. Why? Because I'm at peace with myself. And so this is how we begin to cultivate this experience on a daily basis. You know, most people are running toward fame and money, thinking that that's going to make them feel good. That when they get there, they will finally feel peaceful. They'll finally feel good. They'll have some sense of accomplishment. They'll have some sense of belonging. But it's a vicious cycle. It's a false promise. You can chase all the golden carrots that you want, but it's not going to get you anywhere of any substance. Right? And that's why, again, when you get there, you're miserable. Right? So how do you want to feel? You know, do you want to wake up feeling peaceful every day? Like, I get to wake up every day feeling excited, and I get to go to bed grateful. And I'm not just saying that as a spiritual throwaway or as like this personal development kind of, you know, affirmation. I'm living this experience because I finally, at almost 42 years old, settled into myself. Wait a minute. Being Panache Desai is enough. Like, I don't need to be anybody else. I don't need to do all these other things. I'm able to be myself. I'm able to show up and express who I am, feel peaceful, operate from that place of peace and generate more of that experience. Whoa. And so again, the journey to self-love is through the acceptance of all of these parts of ourselves that we've been taught to judge or deny, or in some way distract ourselves from through some form of addiction.
I'm taking it all in. I'm listening. I'm like, keep going. keep going. Give me more.
I can. So what happens then, right, is that once we start to accept these parts of ourselves that we've been taught to reject or deny, right, or in some way abandon, and we start to gather up these parts of ourselves and love them, right, become aware of the fact that we have them and then love them. And by the way, by virtue of the fact that you're human, you have every quality, right, every single quality. So freedom comes from accepting and embracing every part of yourself. Then more and more you cultivate this peace, you cultivate this state of connection. And then you must become magnetic. It's like people are drawn to you. You know, life is drawn to you. You realize that you don't have to struggle and fight and scratch and claw to get ahead. That actually you're a part of this greater plan that's unfolding in every moment. And the more you can just remain in that state of peace, the more everything is happening on your behalf, right? So for the purposes of this conversation, I would say to everyone that's listening, you are not broken. You don't need to be healed. You don't need to be fixed. You don't need to be improved. It's about returning back to who you naturally are. And it's about no longer invalidating who you were created to be, right? You feel the way you feel for a reason. Instead of trying to get rid of it and stop it or change it, how about we start to accept it? Instead of stopping thinking or changing at the level of belief, how about we embrace that? Instead of trying to constantly, you know, have some different version of your physical appearance or, you know, wrestle with putting on the same 20 pounds or losing the same 20 pounds, how about we start to accept and embrace where we are? Because the more we can work with the version of ourselves that we are, the more effortless life becomes. So I have the pleasure of mentoring 7 people personally from all over the world. These people are some of the busiest people in the world. They make a huge impact all over the world through the course of their lives. And the one thing that I've discovered that every single person struggles with is their humanity. That they don't know how to deal with their emotions. They don't know how to navigate their thoughts. They don't know what to do with their beliefs. They don't know what to do with their bodies, right? It's like we are so ill-equipped to be human. We don't know how to navigate being human, right? And so the more I support them in getting to this place of acceptance and this place of and cultivating this feeling of peace and love, the more they begin to get into this flow and this rhythm and this cadence, and the more every area of their life that they once believed was a problem or an issue naturally finds its own point of resolution. Because when you realize that you don't need to be anyone other than yourself in order to take care of your family and in order to make a difference in the world, life becomes simple, right? It becomes simple. Your choices become simple, right? It's just the next most loving, peaceful choice. The next most graceful choice. That's all it is. And that leads to the next one, the next one, the next one. But at that point, you're building this foundation and this momentum of that way of being. The other thing that people don't realize is that we're not victims of our past. In any moment, we can create how we want to feel. We can literally shift our physical chemistry through creating how we want to feel. We can shift our state of mind. We can shift our physiology. Right? What we've forgotten is that we're creators, that we can literally generate from within us any state of being at demand in any moment, wherever we are. Right? And so once we realize that, wait a minute, I have the option to be peaceful, right? I have the option to come back to calm. I have the option to come back to this place of being centered, to where I can respond instead of react. To where I can make choices that are loving and peaceful and nurturing instead of just reactive, right? Choices that are just going to continue to ripple out dissonance into the world. At that point, I'm able to navigate not just the reality of COVID and all the financial upheaval and all the business decisions and everything else, but wait a minute. I'm also boosting my immunity. I'm taking care of my mental health and well-being on every level. And I'm open and receptive to what life is bringing me because I'm finally living in this truth. That life isn't adversarial, that life isn't opposing me, that everything in life isn't happening against me, that I'm able to live in this state of peace and harmony and recognize that life is actually supporting me in every single way. And what I'd say to you too, Pete, is that, you know, whenever this kind of an uprising happens against an individual, It's actually moving you and redirecting you into something even more powerful and more expansive, right? And so after a while, you become immune to these waves of criticism, these waves of rejection, you know, these waves of abandonment. And typically these waves of rejection, abandonment, and criticism, if that's all you're identified with, can be very destructive. People can implode as a result of these things. But when you have a level of self-worth and self-value and self-awareness, when these waves ripple through your life, whether it be from the media at large in your case, or your mother-in-law in the majority of other cases, or your mother or your father or family member, that opinion, that judgment, that energy just ripples through your experience, but it doesn't disturb you. You don't get stuck in it for hours. You don't get stuck in it for days or months, right? When you think about it, when you're going through what you're going through, for example, or what, you know, David Icke went through for 30 years, or anyone who voiced a unique opinion in the world, right? When you think about what they're going through, the criticism and the judgment could literally be so debilitating that that person would not even want to be alive anymore, right? If that's what your identity is all wrapped up in, okay, it's devastating, okay? But when you're aware and you love yourself and all of that thing, all of that's going on, all of that's just washing through, and your family's doing what it's doing, and the media, and everything's happening in the world, all of a sudden you remember, wait a minute, I have the option to be peaceful here. I have the option to be a state of calm in myself. I don't have to buy into the opinions of others. It doesn't matter what the media is saying about me or what somebody who doesn't even know me is saying about me. It doesn't matter. What matters is how I'm feeling inside of myself. And how I'm feeling inside of myself is what I'm choosing to create every day, as a part of my daily routine, as a part of my daily commitment to being human and to leaving the world in a better place than the way I inherited it.
I love it. I'm sitting here with my headphones on, having the most beautiful conversation and teaching at the same time. So thank you, Panache. But I'm watching our property and we have 20 acres. And every day when I'm doing these podcasts, I'm looking out and watching the birds and our horses. But the birds really... I'm attracted to them. Over the last 5 years, I've been really attracted to watching birds. And there's so many different types of birds that exist and use our property as, I would say, their home or somewhere to visit. And we have the small ones that are playing at the moment and dancing in the sky. And then there's the kookaburras that are hunters and they share with us their message of joy and laughter. Then there's the crows that speak their language and have their resonance. And then there's the herons or the cranes or the types of birds that are the water birds and stealthily hunt their prey for hours and just have this beautiful stillness and calmness about them when they're going about. And so many other birds. We've got pigeons here. It's absolutely enthralling. And I was watching ones yesterday where this little one's attacking this big one because it must have been at its territory or come near its young. And I was just watching, just going, isn't life just absolutely awe-inspiring that there's this dance that goes on? And while you were talking about it and thinking about the people that are in lockdown at the moment, I was like, that's freedom for these animals to keep exhibiting their authentic self and their freedom. And I don't know where I'm going with this, but I can't help but think that human beings currently, the vast majority of them feel trapped compared to the freedom that these birds have, these wild, beautiful beings. And we have some of the most serious lockdowns, as I mentioned, at the moment. So what do people do in that experience? Is it a time for going inwards?
I can speak from personal experience and just share about what's been happening collectively. So my first experience of a major crisis, right, where as an adult male was 9/11. I was in the ashram, I was meditating, went to live like a monk for 6 months and was getting back to the feeling that I'd had in my mother's meditation room as a child. And we're doing selfless service. And one day somebody comes running to where I am and says, there's been an attack in New York. And we're like, it's just completely out of the context of that experience and being on retreat. We all run into like the cafeteria area, the TVs are on, and I'm watching these planes crashing into these buildings. And it's the most surreal thing I had ever seen in my life. It was just so out of the context of my experience at the ashram and just living this monastic life. And the first thing that we did when that happened was we immediately went into service, because it wasn't about us. It was about how can we support people? How can we help people? How can we be available for people in Manhattan that are now grieving the loss of a loved one and that are going to be dealing with this complete turmoil and dissonance of this traumatic event? So that was my first kind of introduction into crisis. Then we had 08 and 09 with the financial crisis. And given that that was kind of a self-generated banking crisis, however, it did overflow to so many other people from all over the world that were impacted by these decisions that were being made at these financial institutions. So again, straight into service. Then when everything was going, my daughter and Celeste and Jan and I were basically for the first 18 months of her life in the hospital with her, and I was still traveling and working. I had one friend that called me every day, and that phone call was the lifeline. It was literally like Celeste had her heart monitor and her blood oxygen level, and you know, and that was that beeping noise that was going on for her and for me. My friend calling me was my lifeline. He's now subsequently their godfather. And I'm sharing this with you because in times of crisis, everything that we've done serves in preparation. So when I think about COVID and everything that's happening with COVID, my book became a national bestseller. I was supposed to be on a 22-city book tour. And the signal that I was waiting for was the World Health Organization declaring a global pandemic. At that point, I sat down with Jan and I said, listen, we need to keep the kids home. There's still some ambiguity as to what we're dealing with here. People should just stay home for a while until I can gather more information and find out what's actually happening, which is very hard to do with China as an entity in general, because it's very hard to get information out of China. So as this was all playing out, I was still gathering data points from both Chinese friends and people that I respected that were there at the time, and people kind of all over the world who had a pulse on what was happening, still gathering data points. But in the meantime, I was just keeping everybody home. And I said, listen, I have no comfort level around anyone flying in right now. I have no comfort level around any live events. I said, cancel the book tour. It's not about me. I don't care. I need to be of service. I said, as of this Monday, I'm going to offer a call to calm. I'm going to offer a 21-minute opportunity for every single person who's going through something in their lives right now to come back to peace and come back to calm, because I know how valuable that's going to be, especially as it relates to our immunity and what it does to our immune system when we're calm and we're peaceful, but also as it relates to all of the decisions that we're going to have to make now, right, as a result of what's happening, as a result of the economic fallout. Also, I became aware of the fact that husbands and wives were going to be home for the first time for an extended period of time, right, for a lengthy duration of time. Families were going to be together again, and that it was important that we create this environment and this atmosphere and this container of peace so that everyone can be in their own experience of this just unimaginable time that we're living in. I mean, it's like, it's just unimaginable that it's happening, right? It's completely unprecedented. And so what I would say to people that are going through this right now is that we all have an opportunity in the midst of what's happening to choose how we're experiencing it. Right. And I've been alluding to this throughout my whole time with our beloved Pete here. You know, we can make of our experience whatever we want to make of it. This can either be the worst time in your life and it's everyone else's fault why you're home and why you're going through what you're going through. And you can get into this stressed out, overwhelmed state of being that's angry and resentful about the fact that you're in the predicament that you're in, or you can begin to cultivate this state of peace and acceptance and inclusivity that, by the way, is not only going to serve you, but every other person around you, okay, a millionfold. And so to everyone that's in lockdown, understand that this is an experience that you've created for yourself to get in touch with what's real and true for you, right? So for example, if you're home with your husband, or your wife or your life partner or your boyfriend or girlfriend or whatever the relationship dynamic is for the first time, or even by yourself, are you happy? Like, do you actually love this person? Are you actually enjoying your time with them? Or have you just been going through the motions for all these years and now you're finally realizing how incompatible you really are? So there's two things that are happening. We're either seeing how in harmony our life is or how dissonant our life is. And what I would say to people is that if you're finding that your life is more dissonant than harmonious, then recognize that you have the ability through influencing how you feel, how you think, and what you're generating in your body in terms of a chemical experience, right? Both your biochemistry, your neurochemistry, right? The environment that you're creating to begin to transform these things. So this is an incredible timeout and an incredible pause through which we get to become reacquainted with what's important and what matters and what's valuable to us. Because the other thing that we're beginning to realize is that actually, what do we really need, right? What do we actually, if you're like me, you have a celery juice in the morning, cup of tea, you know, you have some kind of oatmeal or something, you have a lunch, and then typically you'll have dinner, maybe you won't have dinner, whatever the dynamic is, but you don't actually need very much. Okay. So all of this producing that you're doing, all of this pressure that you're putting on yourself, all of this stress that's been piled on top of you, by the way, that's undermining your immunity, is it really serving you? Is it actually what you want? So this has been an entire reality check, Pete, for everybody. Now, it's been a litmus test for how loving our life is, for how loving we are, for how loving our relationships are. Now, this is where all of our spiritual practice, all of our cultivation of self-awareness and inquiry, this is where the rubber meets the road, you know? And for me, it's just been an absolute miracle to be of service every day to over 11,000 people from all over the world every morning and growing, over 165 countries plus from all over the world, Republicans, Democrats, Fox News people, David Icke people, LGBTQ, Black Lives Matter, you know, every spectrum of every thought group, every think group, every thought group, right? Every collective thought process, every belief system, every ideology gathers together for 21 minutes around this collective intention of peace. And it has been the most illuminating, eye-opening, and awe-inspiring time of my life. Because what that means is that even though we may hold different beliefs and different opinions, the whole thing's a hoax, or this is real and we're all going to die, whatever side of this fence you're on, okay? What that means is, regardless of our belief, guess what? We can all still love each other. We can all still respect the humanity in each other. We can all still meet each other with a sense of civility, right? We can honor the divinity in each other. And it has just been the most phenomenal time. So know that you're not alone in what you're going through. Know that what you're facing is unprecedented. And that at any point, when you choose to create an environment of peace for yourself in your life, head over to the website, join the meditation. It's 21 minutes. All you will do is literally sit there, become aware of your breathing. You can't mess it up. You can't fail. You don't have to be intimidated. But actually what's happening is that all of the people that have been coming have been going through this time of COVID and going through the losing of loved ones as a result of COVID or whatever they're transitioning off, right? Whatever the situation is, but they're going through it for the most part peacefully and centered. They're not being overwhelmed by what's happening. So when we can't find certainty from the world, from our world leaders, from the places of authority that we're used to looking to for certainty, we must create it within ourselves. And that certainty is peace. That certainty is love. That certainty is in our uniqueness, in our ability to authentically express who we are and allow people in turn to express who they are. And that's freedom, Pete. That's the whole thing right there, mate.
Got to tell you, mate, I love you. And I am so glad that improbability of us two meeting together, meeting in another part of the world last year manifested for both of us and for everybody that's listening. I just want to tell you thank you. And I'm going to re-listen to this over and over and over again.
Yeah.
Thank you so much.
And I just want you to know something, you know, I'm very in awe of your courage. And I'm also have a deep admiration of how much you love yourself because your commitment to freedom is what's drawing all of these experiences to you, right? And most people only have to deal with these things on a personal level, right? You're dealing with it on a very public level. And the fact that it hasn't altered who you are, it hasn't created 1 ounce of resentment within you. You're the same Pete Evans that I met you know, last year before all of this really began amping up around you, is a testament to the fact that you have really and truly committed your life to freedom. And I can say the same thing about David Icke. I might not always agree with everything that he says. I might not always resonate with every idea that he's expressing. But you know what? I can at least respect him enough to listen to what he's saying, to take what works and to leave behind the rest. Because we're all here to support one another. We're all here to support each other. We're all here to uplift each other. And whether that's the mainstream media, whether that's the more underground media, whether that's, you know, whatever it is, I feel like everything has a place and everything has a purpose. And to witness you going through this in the way that you are, and to see your smiling face and to see your beautiful heart and to see you continuing to be who you are in the midst of it is a real testament to the fact that when you are loving and when your intention is to love, no matter what's happening around you, you are free. So thank you for that.
It brings me back, and thank you, my friend. It brings me back to actually when we were in that space together in Costa Rica. So many of those nights when people were going through, it sort of came in waves for a lot of people in there after they drank the medicine, that there was purging, there was crying, there was what I spoke about before. And in that space, for me, I ended up going into what you would call the lotus position and just holding space. And it was really, I didn't understand it at the time, but I'm understanding it now. And it's just my perception. But when I sat in this space, and it could be for an hour or two at a time when I was going through these waves, and the enormity that I felt like it was pushing me to breaking point to just hold space while everybody in that room was going through their shit, literally. And I questioned it a little bit in the moment, go, why the fuck am I sitting upright holding this? You know, there was an inner knowing just, you need to hold space for what's going on at the moment. And it feels the same. And it's just such a strange position to be in, and even to verbalize this and vocalize this out loud. But I guess we know what we're here to do, yes, and our purpose is, whether we like it or not. It's like, okay, well, as you're doing, you're holding space for people, yes, at the moment, and you're guiding them to that inner peace. And each one of us has a unique way of doing that. And you do you, I do me, somebody else does somebody else, David Icke, or somebody's an activist, right. Other people hold space behind the scenes. Or so, again, don't emulate anybody.
No.
Be your authentic self, and you'll know what that means, even though at the time you might not know what that means.
Right. Yeah. No, it's a beautiful thing. And I think in some ways, like, that's such a beautiful description, because I think what we're collectively holding space for is humanity's kind of growth and expansion out of outmoded ways of thinking and being and feeling and living. You know, it's almost like division and divisiveness is kind of having its last hurrah, as is control. And all of these things are kind of working their way through the collective expression, right? This kind of collective experience of being human. And it is very surreal. And it almost, on some days, is just, what is going on? You know, because our ability to remain calm and peaceful in the midst of it all is really quite something, you know. And so again, just recognize that you get to hold that space. Like, every one of you that's listening gets to hold that space, first of all, for yourself, and then for everyone around you who is getting caught up in everything, who is getting lost in everything. And also, I want you to know that your opinion and the way in which you're going through this is so valid and so important. You know, your unique lens of perception is so required right now. That voice is so required right now, you know. And so again, I'm just making choices that advocate on behalf of the peace of both myself and others. You know, I'm staying out of the polarities of the experience. That's a good way of describing it. And I'm staying anchored in my heart as a human being, as a brother to the world, and a father to four kids, and a husband and a son. And just going about in my own small way, reminding people that they have the choice to be peaceful. They have the choice to be peaceful. They have the choice to be unique. They have the choice to uniquely express who they are. And so, yeah, thanks. Yeah.
And for me, watching the birds, that's part of my recipe.
Yeah. I feel that.
It helps me. It helps me a great deal. Yeah. Brother, until we meet again, thank you so much. And many blessings to you and much love to you as well and to your family.
Thank you, Pete. Love you, mate. Thanks.
If you would like to become a qualified health coach, then the Institute for Integrative Nutrition, or IIN for short, can help you achieve your goals. I completed their health coaching course many years ago, which has been one of the catalysts for my own journey into what I now love to do, which is to help people achieve greater health through the sharing of information through my books, seminars, podcasts, TV shows, and films. I recommend IIN for anyone wishing to pursue a career in the health coaching and wellness space. IIN is a one-year course, so that if you're a full-time worker, busy parent, or wherever you are in your life, it is flexible enough so you'll be able to complete all the required curriculum. Please see the link included in the podcast show notes or my website to access the free sample class and first module of their program. This will give you a great taste of the format as well as the structure, and you can also utilize my special discount that I can offer you if you decide to sign up. Make sure you tell the admissions team that you're part of the Pete Evans Tuition Savings to claim your very substantial discount. Please visit integrativenutrition.com or email admissions@integrativenutrition.com.
The information, views, and opinions expressed in this podcast should not be treated as a substitute for nutritional, medical, or other advice by a qualified professional. Guests in this podcast express their own opinions, experiences, and conclusions. Nothing in this podcast should be used to diagnose, treat, cure, or prevent any medical condition. Neither Pete Evans nor any sponsor endorse any views, opinions, or conclusions expressed or shared in this podcast.